Okay, there's a lady and she's in hospital, and in the middle of the night Jesus visits her, and she thinks she's dying. So she says, "Jesus, am I going to die?" Jesus says, "No, my child, I'm going to give you another 30 years. She wakes up the next morning, 30 years. She said, "Well, if I'm in hospital and I've got 30 years left, I'm having everything done." She has a liposuction. She has her lips done, her ears done, her nose done, boob job, everything done. Comes out of hospital a month later, crosses the road, double-decker bus, hits her, dead. She goes to heaven. She sees Jesus in heaven. She says, Jesus, you said I had 30 years and as soon as I come out of hospital, I'm dead. He said, "Oh, sorry, love, I didn't recognise you." Now, listen, we haven't got time for many jokes this morning. We'll visit them again tonight. Okay, I've got some Christmassy jokes tonight as well, so. Listen, what am I preaching on this morning? Anybody got anything, any subjects? No, I'm preaching on what I'm preaching on. Okay, there's four chairs behind me because we're going to do something this morning. And I'm just going to redo the stage a little bit because the stage management was very poor this morning. Only joking. What we're going to do this morning, we're going to do a Bible study. There'll be no text on the screen because we're going to do a whole four chapters in 40 minutes or 38 minutes now. And we're going to look at four chapters of a book in the Bible because as a communicator, and particularly a communicator in the context of church, this is the main problem we have this morning. The main problem we have this morning is when I tell this story, you know the end. So you don't put yourself in the story because the people in the story didn't know the end when they were living it. You see, the people in the Bible did not know they were in the Bible. Nobody told them this morning, this morning, Brian, put your best jacket on. This is Bible day. To them, it wasn't Bible day. It was just every day. These people did not know the end of the story when they were making decisions. And so I want to talk to you this morning about the story of a family. We're going to talk about a story, four chapters, one family, because in this story is loads of different things that I think will help your family. Now, you may be here this morning saying, "But Derek, you don't know. I'm the only member of my family here this morning." Well, we'll start there. You may say, "Well, all my kids are in the other room and I've got a big family here this morning." Well, good on you. Good on you for not watching The X Factor. Good on you. So I want to talk about your family in the context of this family. And I'm going to ask the question, is this family really any different from your family? And could your family and my family learn anything from what this family did and what this happened to them? So we're going to look at the whole book of Ruth in the Old Testament, all four chapters in 37 minutes. As you know, I'm very conscious of the time. So here we go. Are we ready? Okay, chapter 1 of Ruth. Chapter 1. This is Ruth, chapter 1. Our four chairs this morning are the four chapters of the book of Ruth. Now, chapter 1, it's a brilliant start of this family. There's a man, he's called Elimelech, who's married to his beautiful wife, Naomi. They have two lovely sons, Mahlon and Chilion. Everything's great in life. Everything's going super duper. They own land. They're quite wealthy. The kids get everything they want. It's a normal, great family. Everything's good. They love God. They know great problems. Everything is good. How many people like it when seasons of life are like that? Everything's good. The kids are doing well. The wife's behaving. The cat's behaving. You know, you can pay your bills. You've got more than enough. Everything's going great. And this is this family in chapter 1. And then the Bible says there is a famine in the land. And your homework today is to go home and read the whole four chapters of the book of Ruth, which should only take you about 12 minutes if you're any good at reading. Or if you were born in Preston, about 25 minutes. Just a pause here. The coffee shop. Listen, when you're posh, I want you to remember me. I was here in the early days in that grotty school, right? So when you're posh and you're all drinking lattes with bits of stuff on top, remember it was a Bolton lad that helped get you here. Just a commercial break. Don't be going all Hillsong and not inviting me back. Just, okay. I know what you're like, you beggars. And So chapter one, we're in this family and everything's going good, everything's happy. And then there's a famine in the land, so they move to a place called Moab. They move for, they were lacking finance. There was a resource problem, there's a food source, so they move. And they move to Moab for approximately 10 years. Both their sons, Mahlon and Chilion, get married to Moabite women. Now, we don't know much about Moabite women, but they weren't the kind of women that they were used to back in Judea. They married Moabite women. The two Moabite women were called Orpha, who went on to have a very successful talk show in America a few thousand years later. And the lady who the book is named after, Ruth. So Orpha and Ruth were married to Mahlon and Chilion. Well, everything's going great. The kids are married. They've flown the nest, the empty nesters. They've loads of money. It's great. And then all of a sudden, disaster. Elimelech dies. The Bible doesn't say how he dies, but he dies. And then it gets even worse that Mahlon and Chilion die too. Now, I don't know about you, but when stuff happens in life that is not planned and seems grotty, what comes out of us is really, really important. So we started with this family in chapter one, that everything was going great, and then disaster. Dad's gone. Elimelech's dead. Mahlon and Chilion are dead. And so all that happened, they left Naomi with two daughter-in-laws. Now, in Bolton and in Preston 2017, we'd get, you know, well, they probably had some policy that they cashed in to make sure they had enough food, and there was a welfare state, would look after people. But in these days, in the Bible days, this was about as bad as it got. That this woman lost everything. She lost her estate, she lost her land, she lost her title, because everything was in the name of the man. Women had no legal rights on anything. So she lost absolutely everything. She even lost the potential of her name to be carried forward, because the name was not carried through the woman. The name of the family was only carried through the man. So Elimelech, Mahlon and Chilion dying, it meant everything was over. This was so bad, it probably meant, in the context, she was either have to go to be a beggar or go to a city to become a prostitute. It was bad. It was so horrendous. So something that started so good gets so bad. And just at the end, before we get to the end of chapter one, she turns to her two daughter-in-laws and says this: I have nothing to offer you anymore. I can't look after you. So she returns to Judea and says to the two daughters that were from Moab, where they went to live for 10 years, you need to return to Moab. I have nothing to offer you. I have nothing to give you. I have no ability to provide for you. I can't have more sons that you can marry. That's too long a wait. Go back. I am absolutely finished. In fact, it gets as bad as this. Now listen, it's got to get pretty bad. You see, the name Naomi means pleasant. And at the end of chapter one, read it, she says, do not call me Naomi, call me Mara. Mara means bitter. She says, because the hand of the Lord has struck against me, don't call me pleasant, call me bitter. You know what? Life sometimes goes from pleasant to bitter, and it's not your fault. All you've got in those moments is your ability to respond to the hand that you have been dealt. She did nothing wrong. It's not like she made a big mistake. Her husband died. Both her sons died. And so she's in absolute mess. And so she says to her two daughter-in-laws, Orpha and Ruth, leave me. Go back to your own people and try and make a life for yourself. And then this. Now you need to listen to this, because in chapter four, this is really important. Orpha came to Naomi and kissed her and said goodbye. So she kissed her mother-in-law and went back to Moab. And then Ruth came to Naomi and said, basically, Bolton paraphrase, I ain't going anywhere. You stuck with me. Where you go, I go. Where you stay, I stay. Your people will be my people. Your God will be my God. Where you die, I die. End. I am going no. You see, at the end of chapter one, we've got this woman called Naomi, who's bitter at the hand life has dealt her. So if the whole of this family was one chapter, well, I don't know how evangelistic that would be. Come to Jesus if you've got a great family, we'll make you bitter. Lesson number one of chapter one. Don't let what you go through define you. Listen, there's people in here this morning, and I'm not saying it because I know who they are. I'm just saying it because in a group of this size there always is. There's people that are in this morning who have been divorced. You are not a divorcee. You just went through it. Don't let what you go through define you. And you see, here at the end of chapter one, we've got Naomi saying, don't call me Naomi, call me Mara. In other words, I want to be identified by this season that I'm going through. Let me tell you what happens in a lot of Christians. And I've been in this thing for many years, and I know how it works. People get stuck in seasons in their life. And if you get stuck in a bitter season, you're finished. You may say, well, you may still go to heaven. Well, theologically, you might still go to heaven. But you've forfeited everything this side of it. You know what God's... Look, I want to say this so compassionately, but I want to say this so really. You know what God's gift to you is when you are bitter? It's not where God will stroke you and say, oh, no. Because that don't get you out. You know what God's gift to you when you're in a season of your life that you're not enjoying? You know what God's gift to you is this? It's chapter 2. Because my Bible says, it don't matter how bad it gets, there's always a future with God. You may say, well, Derek, you don't know my circumstances. And you may come out after the service and paint the worst circumstances I have ever known. You know what God's gift to you is? It's this. It's not, there's, you know, you've got to learn and just handle that season. You've got to realize this. There's another chapter. If you will move, there's another chapter. And I meet too many Christians that are stuck in a season of their life. And they have defined themselves by that season of their life. So their language is like this. Well, that's just the story of my life. Well, that's just my lot in life. And Naomi could have said, well, you know, I've lost my husband. I've lost my two sons. I've lost my future. I've lost my family name. I've lost everything. That's just my lot in life. But don't let what you're going through define you. Don't let what you're going through name you. Don't let what you're going through name you as bitter, name you as divorced, name you as bereaved, name you as something. Just go through it. You know what? I've been through the Mersey Tunnel on many occasions. I've never wanted to stop and live in the middle. Listen, you're going to have to go through stuff. Now, this is the good bit, right? This is good. If you're in a great season in your life, don't worry, it will end. And the flip side is this, if you're in a grotty, horrible, horrible season in your life, if you'll turn the page, it'll finish. See, the thing is this, it's not about what we're going through, it's about we are going through. You know, the Bible talks about conquerors and more than conquerors. And I think you've heard me say this illustration so many times, but it's just so good. What's the difference between a conqueror and more than a conqueror? I watch boxing. Me and my son love boxing. Not each other. We just love watching it on the telly. And a few years ago, I was watching this guy. He got absolutely punched black and blue, but he won the contest on points. So they're interviewing him at the end. His nose is here. His ear is up here. He's covered in blood. There's blood all down his shirt. He's talking like Rocky on Rocky One. Adrian! He's talking like this. And as he's covered, at the back, his little dolly bird wife comes in, high heels, short skirt, all done up. She walks on like this, because that's how women walk. And... And so they're interviewing in Sky Sports and she's at the back. And then they present him as the winner with the big check that had like £1,500,000 on or whatever. And so he's all beaten up and bloody. And she's with the dolly bird at the side. And she takes the check and waddles off. Now listen, He's a conqueror. She's more than a conqueror. Because she did nothing to get it. She's just turned up and cashed a check. Listen, what happens? What happens if everything that God wants to do in you is in the next season, but you're stuck in this one going, it's not fair, it's not fair. It's Ed and Michelle's fault, it's somebody else's fault, it's global warming fault, it's Donald Trump's fault, it's the Preston government's fault, it's Preston North End's fault, it's everybody's fault. Listen, what happens if it's nobody's fault? What happens if it's just life? That life happens, and there's life's good, and there's life that's not great. So chapter one is this. Don't be defined by what you were going through. So can we get on to chapter two? Because this can't get any worse, can it? The only thing it can be is this. And she got a cold sore. That's the only thing, you know. She's lost her husband. So anyway. So let's move on to chapter two. Chapter two is this. Now, we would want, because we're all in instant, we'd want chapter two to be God shows up and lightning bolts come down and it's all so brilliant. Let me say, in the whole book of Ruth, there is nothing what we would term as supernatural in the whole four chapters. In fact, it doesn't even directly mention God. You see, if you put every miracle that's recorded in the Bible in the chronology, I needed Dave. You could have jumped in there, mate. You're a Bible scholar. It works out about one miracle every 13 years. This idea that miracle it only happens on God TV. That it's just most of your life will be lived normally. Just doing the right thing, and there's no angels, no keyboard, no twitch, just getting up in the morning, feeding your kids, taking them to school, loving God, paying your tithes, giving, serving, helping. Most of it will be natural. And if you're looking for that, 15 miracles before breakfast, you've read the wrong book, and you're in the wrong church. Soz. See, chapter two, it gets a bit better, but not a lot better. But listen, if it's as bad as chapter one, I'll settle for a bit better, would you? I'm only looking. So what happens is this. So here we've got chapter two. Naomi and Ruth, they're stuck with each other now because Ruth said, well, you go out, all that. And so basically Ruth goes out begging. Now, in Jewish culture, what happened at the time when farmers would sow seed, all the seed that went round the edge of the field was allowed to be picked up by the poor. So they knew this because they were good people. And so Naomi said to Ruth, go to the field and pick up the bits that fall by the wayside around the outside, so at least we'll be able to eat. So Ruth would go down to the field and she'd pick up the bits that fell at the side, and she'd come home at night and they'd probably have enough to live on. They were scraping away by. They hadn't fallen apart totally. They were scraping, just surviving. Let me tell you, when the road to recovery sometimes has to look like we're surviving. But surviving is better than not surviving. If you're alive this morning, it's simply better than the alternative. Yeah. So let's start there. You may say, well, I'm not thriving and I'm not abundant and I'm not seeing God do incredible things. Well, let's start with where you are. Let's start with a small bit of bread. Let's start with a small seed. So she starts to pick, and then all of a sudden, I love this, because this is why you ladies get involved here. The owner of the field is a guy called Boaz. And Boaz, basically, the Bolton version of this would have been this. He fancied her. He took a shine to her, and if you're reading the Authorised Version, he looked at her and fancied her. So it's almost like he kind of thought, oh. He may have rolled his eyes at her. She may have picked him up and rolled him back. He said, I don't want anything. No. So he starts to see this young lady that every day is coming to his field, or one of his fields, because he was a wealthy landowner, and she's picking things up. And he says to his guys, Who's she? Who is she? Now, let me give you the church version of this. The guy on guitar, you're a new woman in church, you see the guy on the guitar and you're seeing he's playing and you're looking as he's got a wedding ring on. And you're thinking, oh, you know, who's he? Eric Smith, oh. I know, I'm joking. Who's he? Oh, he's called Matthew. Oh. Now, you're not marrying him, but you've clocked it. Coffee after, he's over there, you're over here, and all of a sudden, there's movement. You're kind of moving over. You're moving over. And then you bump into my... Hi! Listen, we read the Bible like these people didn't feel like you did. He fancied her. Boaz saw her and went, hallelujah. Now, it's important for chapter 4, Boaz knew a hot woman when he saw it. Now, if you're a Christian man in here, there's nothing wrong with hot women. You can only have one, though. One fast car and one fast wife, that's all you can have. So he noticed her and really loved her. Really. So this is what he did, right? So there's no great... She's still struggling. She's still begging. But all of a sudden, she's been noticed. Day after day, she went to the field and just picked up things, but she was getting noticed. So Boaz said to the people working with him, look, Dave, come here. When you scatter seed, make sure a lot falls near her. Because though she had no clue, Boaz was starting to provide for her. Just scatter a bit more seed. Just make sure that she's got more than enough. You know, if we'd have stuck in chapter 1, Naomi and Ruth could have just sat and died and said it's bitter for us and sat and died. But see, we're in chapter 2 now and all of a sudden, nothing supernatural is happening yet. There's no, like, angels arrived or lightning bolts or anything like that. But all of a sudden, things are looking a little bit up because Boaz has noticed. Let me say chapter 2 is all about faithfulness produces fruitfulness. Faithfulness produces or brings fruitfulness. You know why a lot of people never break through? Because they never do anything long enough. I've been preaching, evangelizing, doing what I'm doing in Bolton now for 33 years. It's a long time. I've outlived most of my critics. They died long ago. I've got new ones, but... You see, my thing is this. Stick with it. If you know it's right, stick with it. Because it's almost like this. They could have crawled up in a fetal position in chapter 1 and died. And yet, chapter 2, it's almost like because she goes out and she's being faithful and she's being faithful, Boaz notices her and provision starts to come. Fruitfulness will find faithfulness. And faithfulness will produce fruitfulness. It's not short-term. Not even me. It's like these people that say, oh, I tithed last week. I didn't get 100-fold. Tithed on Sunday. I didn't get 100-fold by Wednesday. It don't work. Listen, I've tithed for 33 years. It works. Doesn't work as fast as you want it to sometimes. But listen, I haven't gone short. We've never begged bread. We've had what we've needed. And I have given 10% a minimum every year for 33 years. So that's why I'm sold on it. Why? Because I think when I'm faithful to God, it brings fruitfulness to my life and my world. So that's why I'm not doing it because I need to. I'm doing it because I have to. Not have to the church, but I have to because I want to be fruitful. So you see, chapter 2, fruitfulness is starting. Now, before we get on to chapter 3, because it gets a bit racy in chapter 3, if there's any children under 18, just, you know, might need to send them to the toilet about now. So things are going well. Naomi's at home. Ruth's coming back, and every day she comes back with a little bit more provision. It doesn't really get racy. That was a joke. Well, it does a bit, but anyway. So a little bit more provision is coming. And Naomi twigs that something's up here. You know, women know, don't they? Women have an internal understanding of some things that men are thick at. I've been married 27 years, I know what I'm talking about. And it's almost like Naomi goes, something's happening here. Because maybe Ruth comes home and says, yeah, there's this guy and he's the landowner. He's called Boaz. And you know, when I go to his field, I get loads more seed than anybody else's. And she's going, I get this. Boaz has got the hots. Yeah. So let's move on to chapter 3, shall we? Chapter 3. Naomi's thinking, how can we get out of this mess? Well, Boaz seems to be somebody who's taking an interest in Ruth. So this is, now, I'm sorry if this is not what you would want to hear, but there's a bit of seduction going on in chapter 3. Because this is what Naomi says to Ruth. She says this, basically, Bolton 2017 version would be, put your lippy on. You know them big eye things that you've got, eyelashes. I said eyebrows for you, eyelashes. Get your big eyelashes on, look good, get your best stuff on and go to the field tomorrow, because she's twigging that Boaz has got the hots for Ruth. So I can just imagine this, right? Let's make it a film. Everybody's out in the fields and that day Ruth turns up. High heels, big eyelashes, lippy, all done up, big earrings, looking like she's going clubbing in Preston. And Boaz is like, oh, hallelujah. And so he's taking more and more and more of a shine, more and more of a shine, and it's looking good. And then Naomi says to Ruth, you know the party that Boaz is throwing? Well, get to the party, get an invite, and when Boaz is well-oiled, when he's happy, go and sleep at his feet. Is anybody else shocked this is in the Bible? Because surely a good mother-in-law said, let's have a prayer meeting for provision. Let's claim the provision scriptures of Deuteronomy. Oh, no. But she said, no, get your lippy on and your big eyes and let's go and sleep at his feet. So that's what she does. In the middle of the night, Boaz wakes up and sees this woman asleep on his feet. Now, maybe for you, that's no big deal. For me, that would be a shock. It's funny, the other night I was in bed and it was the middle of the night and we just watched a film about a killer crocodile. And I had this dream that a crocodile was trying to get my feet. This is absolutely true. So I started kicking like mad in the middle of the night and I kicked Georgine, my wife, out of bed. She said, what's wrong? And I just woke up in the middle. So I imagine Boaz waking up and there's this beautiful girl that he likes asleep at his feet. So he wakes up and panics and goes, what? And then he says to her, of all the other women in the village or the town, you are the one of most noble character, because you have not chased the young men, but you have kept yourself. You see, chapter 3, it's about this. It's about character. Character's king. Character is what God is looking at your life. Character is everything to God. Now, look at me, because this bit is really important, because chapter 4, God's going to slap you. And me too. How do you get from chapter 1 to what we're going to see in chapter 4, faithfulness and character? How do you get anything in the Christian life? Faithfulness and character. That you can remain faithful when your circumstances are bad, and when you can understand that what's God doing in your world now? He's working on your character. People come and say to me as a pastor, and I do slap them because I'm not a very good pastor. God's not doing anything in me. Yes, he is. He's working on your character All the time. What is God doing in the earth? Your character. What is God doing when you feel good? Your character. What is God doing when you feel bad? Your character. What is God doing when you don't know if even God exists? Your character. What is God doing when you want to kill somebody? Your character. What is God doing when it's brilliant? What is God doing all the time, 24/7, 365 days a year? He's working on our character. Because if our character isn't right and our faithfulness is not right, we'll never get to chapter 4. And the journey of our families will get stuck. We'll get stuck at bitterness. We'll get stuck at lack. We'll get stuck at lack of provision unless we realize this. No matter where I am, through faithfulness and character, I can get to chapter 4. Right, let's get to chapter 4 because time's going. And I want to throw in a few big hits here. Chapter 4. You can only have a chapter 4 if you've had a chapter 1. Everything starts somewhere. You can only have a chapter 4 if you had a chapter 2, and you can only have a chapter 4 if you had a chapter 3. We're all on a journey of that becoming. But chapter 4 is this, that Boaz marries Ruth. He marries her. He says, she's not just going to be my hallelujah moment. Any moment, I want to marry her. So Ruth marries Boaz. And they have a son. We'll come to him in a minute. But can you imagine chapter 4? So here's Naomi, right? Here's Naomi. Think about it. A couple of chapters ago, she said, don't call me Naomi, call me Mara, for my life is bitter. Now she's got a little bouncing baby boy, grandma, bouncing this little baby. Everything was restored to her. Because what we also learn in chapter 3 and chapter 4 is this. Boaz, when he saw her and wanted to marry her, had a plan. You see, there's a word in chapter 3 and chapter 4 called this, a kinsman redeemer. And it was basically, to be a kinsman redeemer, I'll try and explain it to you, you needed to do or have three things. One, you needed to be related to the person you were going to redeem. Secondly, you needed to have enough wealth to redeem it. And thirdly, you need to be willing to redeem it. So all of a sudden, Boaz is in the field. He looks at Ruth, wants her. So he works out a plan of how he's going to get her. And he realizes that he's second in line to be her kinsman redeemer. So he gets the guy who's first. And he has to have a plan. I love Boaz because he's a businessman. This is transactional, not supernatural. And so he gets the kinsman redeemer that's first in line because Boaz is second. And he says this. Now get this because there's humor in this. Remember Boaz, he recognized hot women. He says to the kinsman redeemer, you can have all Elimelech's land, his title, his cattle, everything that he had. You can have it. You can have his wife. You can have everything as long as you make a commitment to take his wife, Naomi. Now the Bible doesn't say if Naomi was a good-looking woman, or life had been hard on her. It doesn't say. But what it does say is the person that was in line to be kinsman redeemer said, yes, I want Elimelech's land, and I want his fortune, and I want his titles. And yet when Boaz said, then you've got to have his wife, he said this, no thanks. And he walked away, and then Boaz stepped forward and said, then I'll take it, I'll redeem it, I'll take everything. You see, chapter 4 is really, when you understand this whole thing that we've been going on about this family, it's knowing this, that though Naomi didn't know it, and though Ruth didn't know it, their future was Boaz. Your resources are in your relationships. Your resources are often in people that God brings into your world without a hallelujah chorus. They just walk in one day and say, hi. They may not look like God's answer. They may have a funny Bolton accent. They may be from the south of England. They may be a different colour. They may be a different nationality. They may not look like God's answer, but your resources are in your relationships. How did God bring prosperity to this family? Boaz. So Boaz marries Ruth. Naomi has got a little bouncing baby boy called Obed. All her money is back to her and more, because Boaz was a very, very wealthy landowner. Her name came back to her. Her title came back to her. Her standing in the community came back to her. Why? Because of Boaz. Now these next 6 minutes, this could change your life. And I'm just saying, if you get this, this could change your life. I like going to the theatre. Went to the theatre in Chicago a couple of weeks ago. And me and my wife, it's one of our things. We love going to the theatre. And in a theatre, there is what's happening on the stage. And what's happening on the stage is choreographed. It's brilliant. It's lovely. But if you've ever been like I have, backstage at a theatre, what's happening in the wings where you can't see is chaos. There's people running around. There's people getting undressed. There's people getting dressed. There's people with bits of staging. And you know what's happening in the wings? They are creating the next scene. You know where God is in your chaos? He's creating the next scene. Because there's always a Boaz in the wings. You see, for you today, you're sat here with me in Valley Church and you've got a set of circumstances that's like the stage. It's like what's happening on your life. It's like what everybody can see. But God's over here behind the curtain and he's getting everything ready. There's Boaz, he's getting ready. Because in the journey of this family, when everything seemed lost, who walked on? Boaz. Do you not think that God knows what you need? Do you not think God can get it to you? Do you not think that God sees the mess sometimes we make of our life? Well, where is God in that mess? Where is God in chapter 1? Well, I'll tell you where God is in chapter 1, and I'll tell you where God is in chapter 2, and I'll tell you where God is in chapter 3, and I'll tell you where God is in chapter 4. He's in the wings, preparing the next season. You know what God's doing right now? He's preparing your next chair. Because for Ed and Michelle, there's another chair. For Dave Scholes, there's another chair. For Derek Smith, there's another chair. And for you, there's another chair. You know what God's doing? He's preparing that. The question you have is, are you preparing you for your next chair? Because God's preparing the next chair. There are people that God is preparing now that you've never met who are going to save your life. The people in the future of this church who are going to be massively influential, they're not even here yet. Why? Because we're in chapter 1 and they're not here till chapter 3. Where are they? They're in the wings. They're in the wings, and what's God's working on them. Some of the people that are going to make this church all it can be over the next 20 years aren't even saved yet. They're in bed. Why? Because they had a skinful last night. You see, it's not just about here and now. It's about understanding the context of God over everything that we do. So, all right, chapter 4. Oh, this is good. So little Naomi bouncing little Obed on the knee. Everything restored. Everything stored through Boaz, the kinsman redeemer. Can we go back to chapter 1 just a minute? In chapter 1, Orpah and Ruth had two different responses when it hit the fan. Orpah, what did she do? She kissed and left. And the Bible said, what did Ruth do? She clung. I mean, it does sound like a low-budget, dodgy movie, but are you a kisser or a clinger? Because that tells me everything I need to know. When your life is in a mess, do you kiss the promises of God goodbye, or do you cling with all of your heart? Now, listen. So, what did Orpah do? She kissed goodbye. What did Ruth do? She clung. Chapter 4. Obed had a son called Jesse. Jesse had a son called David. A few chapters later, not in this book, because Ruth finishes chapter 4, but a few years later, David has a fight. Do you remember? Orpah went back to Moab. The Bible doesn't tell us, but church history does. She went back to Moab. She remarried. She had 4 sons. The eldest son was called Goliath. and in years to come, way on the chairs ahead, David, from the line of the clingers, fought Goliath from the line of the quitters. And there is a Jewish proverb today that says this: the sons of those that kiss will yield to the sons of those that clung. You see, we've got to understand the context of our world. It's not just about what we do. It's about the things that we action, the things that we set in process. That's why churches can't take shortcuts, because shortcuts set the next season up for disaster. That's why we've got to make sure. And I want to say to you and your life right now is this: if you're in chapter one, God's gift to you is chapter two. If you're in chapter two, God's gift to you is chapter three. If you're in chapter three, God's gift to you is chapter four. And if you're loving life in chapter four, chapter one might be just around the corner. Because life is not just about a stagnant thing. Life is about seasons and opportunity, and seasons and choices, and seasons and struggles and struggles and seasons. It's about changing chair. So I'm finished this morning by asking the question: are you a kisser or a clinger?